Hey, Kendall. Thanks for coming back. Cheers, no. Joel. So it seems plenty has changed since we spoke this time last week, 7 days, but we'll get to all of that shortly. But in the COP23, Joel just spoke to James Shaw, and you were keen to chat about it and its sort of impact on the Pacific nations.
So COP23 wrapped up last week, 2 weeks of negotiations to further implement the Paris Agreement, sort of discuss, you know, are our emissions good enough? And three big significant things happened at COP23. So the Thailand-NOAA dialogue was defined, which this was originally facilitative dialogue. So they really wanted to add a Pacific flavour to these negotiations. And the Thailand-NOAA dialogue is the process through which all countries revise their ambitions in reducing greenhouse gases before 2020. And it aims to increase that ambition and encourage countries to resubmit more ambitious NCDs. So that's their national climate contributions. So that was a big thing. But one of the other issues was around loss and damage. And no concrete decision was made around whether non-developed countries will receive any compensation from developed countries around the loss and damage that is caused by climate change. So this is, you know, for example, with Cyclone Winston in Fiji, is Fiji going to receive any form of compensation from developed countries given that greenhouse gas emissions from big climate polluting countries have caused this event to happen?
Right, yeah, that's very interesting. And they haven't reached an agreement on that.
That is still developing. So that's that is leading into COP24, which is next year.
Right.
So in January, we'll probably hear more about the solidification of that, of those discussions. But a massive thing for women at the COP23 was the first action plan on gender of the UNFCCC. And a lot of people were saying that, you know, women are an integral part of sustainable development and climate change negotiations, that really needs to be more in the forefront and women need to be acknowledged. And I think that was a great part of COP23, not only acknowledging and hearing the voices of Pacific Islands, but also that women are heavily involved in climate negotiations.
Cool. Yeah, and do you want me to move on to Tonga? Or what's happening? Are you still going with the COP23?
Still
there's
COP23.
More. There's lots on this COP23.
Lots on COP23. But I think one of the drawbacks of COP23 was, you know, everyone's realised that their climate change ambitions are not enough.
Right.
As at the moment we're headed, you know, for a global average temperature of 3 degrees, which is not survivable, especially for our Pacific Island countries. We're not even going to reach 1.5 degrees. So everyone's realised, and particularly through Frank Bainimarama's vision for COP23, and also the amount of protest and activist support at COP23, is that, you know, we need to do more. And I think that's a great thing that's come out of COP23. But, you know, as a lot of environmental organisations have been saying, it needed to be more concrete, and unfortunately that wasn't achieved at this COP.
Right, so it seems like everyone's saying that it needs to happen, but there's not it's not been put into quite action quite yet.
Not the action. So outside of the Thailand-NOAA dialogue, the loss and damage and the gender action plan, you know, not much has come out of how we're going to be able to meet 1.5 degrees.
Right. And I'll move on because I could talk about that a lot, but we'll move on. We've got a few things to talk about. So with Tonga, they had the snap election, right?
The snap election was last week.
Yes, they had the snap election last week.
Was last week. And this came about, after in August when King Tipu VI in an unprecedented decision, dissolved parliament.
Yeah.
Unheard of in Tonga, which is a constitutional monarchy. The election was held last week, and that was a landslide victory for Pohiva's Democratic Party. So voters got to decide 17 of the 26 seats in the Legislative Assembly. There are not usually 9 nobles, and they elect among themselves. And then the Prime Minister, at his discretion, is also allowed to appoint 4 non-elected MPs to his cabinet.
And are they usually noble? Or they're not noble, those ones, that's sort of just at the Prime Minister's discretion?
So there's a mix of democratically elected MPs and also nobles because of the constitutional monarchy.
Yeah.
And politicians who campaigned against Pohiva during the snap election, he said that they'd miss the public about his administration. This is particularly around, you know, Tonga not being able to host the 2019 Pacific Games, which was a huge issue that came out this year. But Pohiva won 14 parliamentary seats, which enabled them to form the next government without needing the help of the nobility or independents. So Matangi Tonga, the observers have said this morning in Matangi Tonga that this, you know, shows that this has been the people's wish, that democracy is still alive and well in Tonga, and that they do support Pohiva despite all of these whisperings about his administration.
Can I just jump in for a second there? Because there was quite strong support for the opposition to Pohiva while all this was going on. So do you think it's quite a surprising result?
Well, Professor David Roby has said, you know, to me this morning that it suggests that a lot of the info feeding out before the election was wrong. So it was either biased or reflected vested interest. So he said that it kind of showed that the people didn't have as much, you know, didn't take as much notice around the elite's views on media freedom.
Right. And would you, like, obviously since Tonga began a democratic constitution in 2010, would it fair to say it's been the political process is something that's still been established there, this is the way that they're operating? It's been quite, obviously it's chopped and changed a wee bit.
Can you repeat that? Sorry.
So sort of like, sorry, since the democratic constitution in Tonga in 2010, since it began, obviously it seems like things there have been a bit back and forth and up and down just with the way that they're operating over there. Sorry, I'm you're actually a lot more educated on this than me, so I might have been misinformed here at the back of the newsroom. But actually, we'll move on to Solomon Islands because that's a bit more I know about. I learned a lot off you last week with that. So last week we spoke to you in the Solomon Islands, and they've now got a new Prime Minister.
New Prime Minister. So we spoke last week about this and all of the chopping and changing that
yes.
seemed to be going on in the Solomon Islands and the changed allegiances, but most importantly, former Prime Minister Manase Segawe being voted out in a no confidence vote. So the election was on November 15, and MP for Small Malatea, Rick Hunapuela, who actually switched to the caretaker government at the last minute. He was elected Prime Minister 33-16, and he's actually pledged to fight corruption. But the issue with the elections in the Solomon Islands now is what this means for West Papua. Segawe was a vocal supporter of the right to self-determination in West Papua, and in his, you know, in the nine-hour debate in Parliament the other week, he rejected, you know, the other candidate, John Maffitt Figui's statement that the Solomon Islands was wasting its time with its support.
Yep.
And he said that, you know, our support of West Papua needs to be consistent with our position on New Caledonia's independence and Taiwan's bid for UN membership. So we don't know how or if Rick Hunapuela is going to support West Papua, and he's going to continue Segawe's support of West Papua. So there's a real question on, you know, that Pacific support.
Right. And how long are the terms in the Solomon Islands as Prime Minister?
So this, because of the vote of no confidence against Segawe, this was not quite a snap election, but it was an election to decide the new Prime Minister and a caretaker government. Solomon Islands has its general election next year. So we're looking to see another government and potentially another Prime Minister next year with a general election.
Cool. And this is your last week with us on The Wire, on The Monday Wire?
On The Monday Wire, yes. We are really happy to continue the Southern Cross next year. And as I said last week, we have our Pacific Media Centre 10th anniversary on the 30th of November.
Next Thursday,
and it's an open invite. So anyone is welcome to come along, learn more about the centre, learn more about our work, and also our region. And you can send that, you can find all the info on our Facebook page. And Pacific Media Centre Director David Roby has just returned from his academic exchange in Indonesia. That has been a great success, and we're always happy to collaborate with other universities in our region.
Kia ora. Thank you so much, Kendall. Thanks,
Leonard.
It's been an honour having you on the show for the past few months. Have a great day.
Thank you.